יהיו לרצון עם רפא, והגיעון לבי לפניך אדוני צורי ודועלי. שלום עליכם. ברוכים הבאים. Welcome everyone. This is our Kosher Torah Open Forum for tonight, Monday, February the 8th, 2010. 25, if I'm not mistaken, of Shvat. We are continuing in our classes from a very ancient text, the Book of Enoch, Sefer Chanoch Aleph. Now, I've talked all about this in the introduction and first class, which is available online at koshertorah.com. If you did not hear that first class, you might want to go online and check it out. It is, of course, available in this video forum. And an MP3, I believe, should also be available for those who don't want to have to spend the time to look at my pretty face here watching us Kosher Torah TV, if you will. But anyway, getting back to the issues at hand here. Sefer Chanoch is the source of a tremendous amount of later Midrashic and Agadic literature that we find in the Gemaras, we find in the Zohar, and as I mentioned in the previous class, Rabbi Chaim Vital, the great Mekubal, even quotes this book, and specifically in his Zoharic commentary, or Achama, and he states clearly it's the one that was in the hands of the non-Jews, because until the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls, we did not have an existence, to the best of my knowledge, an existing Hebrew Aramaic copy of the text. And the translation that I have here, I am certain, is faulty. The author, the translator, of course, I believe did the best academic job that he could, translating, I believe, from an Ethiopian text. But as we know, you know, whenever you translate from one to the next, to the next, to the next, some things get lost. And I am certain of that. Because when I look at this text in English translation now, I can only guess what the original Hebrew or Aramaic would be saying based upon how the text is written. Because there are certain concepts that are clear here, and we're going to discuss chapters 2, 3, 4, and 5 today. And I'm going to put some matters that are discussed here in context to not only the later Kabbalah, and I'm going to bring you some materials from Rabbi Chaim Vital, but I'm also going to quote to you from the Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, which itself is quoting the Gemara. And you will find that the same mentality that both the Kabbalah and the Code of Jewish Law bring out in for modern day and application in Torah law, we find the same mentality having its written genesis, if you will, right here in Sefer Chanoch. So, even though this book is certainly not part of our canon of Torah literature, there are still historical precedents to validate its authenticity and its kedusha, and the teachings therein are especially significant, because in light of modern times, where many of us believe that we are, many things are happening. Again, I'm dating this lecture, as I do all open forums, and somehow, some way, someday, somebody in the future is going to come back and listen to this, either video or audio, and I'm going to tell you, things are happening. Big things, world-changing events. And this is what I discussed on the Tamar Yonah radio program on Israel National News, that all of these things are being guided by a higher hand. And we often allow ourselves to be distracted, that instead of seeing God's higher hand, we look at all of the hoopla and the national media and everything we read in the news and everything else. All of this is nothing more than a distraction, because the ancient sages from time immemorial have warned us these changes have to come. And we're in the middle of them right now. And Sefer Chanoch brings down some very profound teachings of the nature of what happened in the pre-flood days and our sages throughout the Zohar and Kabbalistic traditions always tell us, go back to the Book of Enoch, the teaching of the Book of Enoch. Now, we can't necessarily always correlate with the later traditions that are quoted in the Book of Enoch where it was in the Book of Enoch, which gives us rise to suggest that there might have been numerous books of Enoch that we don't yet know. But yet, the traditions are there and warn us that what happened in the days before the flood is not an end story. It's not a finished tale, but it's continuing. And we're coming to this, if you will, crescendo in human history, which is finally going to bring an ultimate conclusion of this chapter in human history and the birth of the next. Call that Messianic Era. We all know about that stuff. Go on KosherTorah.com. I have plenty of things there on the topic matter for you to research. But a point that the first chapter discussed, and we covered this in the last lesson, was the great warning. Hashem is coming. He's going to punish the wicked and uphold the righteous. This is echoed in the prophecies of Zechariah. It is echoed throughout our Talmudic tradition, our Kabbalistic traditions, the Zoharic traditions. Nothing new here to report. But a question that I'm often asked, and I was actually asked this on the Tomorrow Yona radio program, and I'm asked this pretty much everywhere. Rabbi, what can we do to prepare? Where should we go? What can we do? Should we all move to the land of Israel and that's going to be our safe haven? I think the prophecies are specifically clear that the land of Israel is not the answer. Is it our promised land? Yes. Do we all have a biblical obligation and a moral sense of responsibility to live there? Yes. Does that mean every one of us can just pick up and go? No. Biblical prophecy is very clear that there are going to be Jews in around the world who are there, and Mashiach is going to gather us in. It is very clear that not all Jews are going to be gathered to the land of Israel. Those who have the merit, and as my Rav would say, the stamina to tolerate the present society of the government and status of, in the country of Israel, go for it. God bless you. And if that is your destiny, then it will be established. But for those of us who are presently here outside the land, this is also God's purpose. And we all have a purpose wherever we are and however we are. And the ultimate answer to that big question, Rabbi, what do we do when, you know, the poo-poo hits the fan? Whether it's the war, the inevitable war with Iran, right? This was prophesied in ancient literature. The Gemara speaks of it. And most people in history are not aware that for hundreds of years, Rome was at war with Persia, right? Roman Parthian, right? Roman Parthian wars. Go online and read about this. From days before Julius Caesar to the time after the establishment of Christendom. Hundreds of years, these two great world powers are fighting each other. For that to happen again, like King Solomon said, there's nothing new under the sun. This is history. Destiny. And that's just the way it is. I have a question here in text. So I have a question. Someone says, Paros versus Edom, who will win? Interestingly, the Talmud states in Tractate Yuma, Daf Yud Amud Aleph, by merit, Paros should win. But by the edict of heaven, Edom will. Go argue that with heaven if you don't like it. Nothing any of us are going to do. It is an old Broadway play that I always quote its name, which is, your arms are just too short to box with God. You're not going to win. Heaven is in control of these things. And you want to know the safe haven, the secret place where you're supposed to go? Psalm 91, verse 1 says it. The one who dwells in God's secret place will dwell securely under the shadow of the Almighty. What is that secret place? Well, I don't know. I'm looking here online and I recognize, you know, we have the names of the people who are with us. And I see many names of many people who I recognize. And I know I have people here from at least three different continents, possibly four. And I'll tell you something. For those of you who are in Asia, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, North America, and South America, The safe havens that we are each going to find when the time comes are going to be unique and different. But I will promise you this. If you are truly bonded with God, then that safe haven you will find. But you will not find it by preparing survivalist style to hold off the New World Order and I'm going to fight them off. No, you won't. They always are going to have more guns and they're always going to have more soldiers and more power. And quoting the Christian Bible, all right, you'll allow me to do that, please. One who lives by the sword will die by the sword, right? The true way is you're going to bend like a reed in the wind and you're going to learn to survive. Now, with regards to the Holocaust, someone here is mentioning about the Holocaust and lots of Jews bonded to Hashem died anyway. Not really. Everyone romanticizes the life in Eastern Europe as this big, beautiful bastion of holiness. Well, it wasn't so. In all due respect, life in Eastern Europe was... Oh boy, if it was a mess, the only mess I could compare it to is the mess that we have today. How's that? All right? People can look to the land in Israel today, Western countries. In the days of the Second Temple, things were a mess too. Read Josephus. Read the words of our sages. Things were terrible. And they pretty much created their own doom. And that's pretty much what's happening today. And if you learn the great lesson from Rabbi Techtal, who was a strong, staunch anti-Zionist until the tanks surrounded him, he taught and learned that those who stand up and fight somehow manage to survive. Now, it's not a contradiction to what I just said, he who lives by the sword dies by the sword. Because there were a tremendous number of Jews who fled, head for the hills, and hid, and survived in defense, but not in offense. Many of them joined the partisans and took their chances. Many of them hid. Members of my own family literally hid and never showed their face during the entire Holocaust and survived to tell the story. Someone's asking me a question here in text. Am I saying that the Jews of Eastern Europe after 1941 were more deserving of death than, say, secular Jews in North America? Deserving? I don't make those decisions. I'm sorry. I'm not God. My divine powers are rather limited, being that I am just a frail, mortal, limited human being as I be. But I will tell you, I will share with you a true Masara. This is something that most people don't know. This is one of these secret Kabbalah traditions. Okay? And oh no, we're not veering from the Book of Enoch at all. What I'm telling you right now is the introduction to it. My Rebbe Meir Levi Alav Shalom taught me this. We cannot ignore the role of the Sabbateans. There were no Sabbateans. That is a myth that was fed to certain people as false information to distract them from the truth. That is all a bunch of garbage. My Rebbe Meir taught me this. He said that in the early 1930s, there were a number of rabbis in Eastern Europe, in northern Morocco, throughout the Middle East, and elsewhere, who in one night all had a dream. Nature of the dream is not necessarily for public dissemination, but they were all individually warned that destruction is coming to Eastern Europe, and they should all prepare for what is coming to the world. And the rabbis from North Africa got together and used the powers of Kabbalah Ma'asit and were very successful in making sure their domains were protected. We all know the very famous story. Rabbi Yehuda Fatiha, Alav Shalom, the great Minchat Yehuda, was one of these rabbanim. And he fought using the powers of Kabbalah Ma'asit. It's the famous circle of blood that he drew around the land of Israel. And in that respect, he protected the land of Israel as well. But the rabbis in Eastern Europe, for whatever reason, chose not to walk that path, did not want to hear the message, and chose something different, which led to a different outcome. This edict was well known. The Zohar HaKadosh says very clearly, when Hashem unleashes what's called Malach HaMashchit, the angel of destruction, he has the authority from God to destroy righteous and wicked alike. because such is the ordinance of heaven. And the only choice that the righteous have, Psalm 91 verse 1, to hide themselves, to be concealed. And those who have that bonding with God hear this voice. And you know those who are truly bonded with God do hear that voice, and they leave, and they move. Now you can ask, what about the great righteous and the tzaddikim, the holy rabbis who perished in the camps? Many of them perished in the camps simply because they had to. Because when they were asked by heaven, or I should say, when they asked heaven, what do you do? Like Rabbi Akiva before them, they were told, you will stand down, you will stand put, and you will serve as a role model to your community and die as a martyr. And that is why many of them chose that. It's not that they said, yippee, I get to be tortured, yay. No, they just said, like Avraham Avinu, like Yitzchak Avinu, like Rabbi Akiva, I have a higher calling, a higher responsibility. Mine is not to question why. Mine is but to do and shut up. And they salute the true commanding officer, who is none other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I have another question here. Who were well-versed in Kabbalah Ma'asit in Eastern Europe? You should know that the true Kabbalah Ma'asit came out of Germany long before it ever emigrated into other places. A secret we don't have to discuss. Moving right along. What is this secret? Bonding with God. What am I supposed to do? In all due respect, all of kosher Torah, everything that I teach is about that. My course in the Sefer Yetzirah, my course in basic Kabbalistic meditation, my course in spiritual guides is all directed towards this end. Because I know that a destiny awaits us. Somebody's asking a question, why do we have to go through any of that? Why can't Mashiach just come without all that? Because, my dear questioner, God has a plan. And we as a collective humanity have lessons to learn. And I truly wish that we were open, sincere, collectively as a race. I would love, personally, I would rejoice that I can embrace the anti-Semitic enemies of the Jewish people who would come to me and say, you know, let's get rid of all the hatred. Let's stand together as one human race before God, work together, build together, make our world a paradise together so that when Mashiach comes, we can greet him arm in arm and say, welcome to the world that we've created in the name of God. Oh. Oh, what? Who wouldn't want that? Well, unfortunately, a lot of people who hate don't want that. I do. So, my dear questioner, why does the old ways have to be torn down? I'll answer you in the words of a man who I consider one of the greatest prophetic minds of the 20th century, a master Kabbalist, an Eastern European rabbi, who became what is called the father of modern religious Zionism. And I speak of Rabbi Abraham Isaac Kook, Alav Shalom. A greater spiritually minded prophetic mind in the 20th century did not exist, in my opinion. He saw, and he wrote in his book, Oroth, which is available in English translation, that the entire civilization which we have built upon lies, deception, immorality, and imbalance, by nature, its own corruption will by nature dismantle it, destroy it. Our society today is crumbling, not because of the wrong philosophical principles, but because of the wrong people and the way that we act wrongly. Why can't Mashiach come without that? He can. And if you believe that he can, change the world. 6 billion people. I can't reach 6 billion people. I only have this form, and I speak to whoever I can. And I tell you the prophetic message. The reason why the temple was destroyed, one reason alone, why the Ark of the Covenant was taken away, why prophecy came to an end, one reason. Don't go quoting me all these fancy Gemaras. One reason. Answer? We did not listen to the words of the prophets. Period. Solution? Start reading what the prophet said. start doing what they told you to do. I don't know who the real author of Sefer Hanoch is, but I believe, no, I don't think he was a Navi, because we didn't have Nebuah, but Ruach HaKodesh we certainly had. And this man who wrote these words spoke with this Ruach HaKodesh, telling us what it is that we need to do, not only in his day, but in our day today. You see, these words were known by our sages. Hillel read them, Shammai read them, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai read them, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Rabbi Akiva read these words. They all knew these words. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who you remember, knew well that the destruction was coming, knew that the edict from heaven had been ordained and it's not going to be returned, knew that he had to hide it, he had to get out of there. And the famous story in the Gemara that he faked that he was dead to get his body out, and that because he established the community in Yavne, Torah survived. God's plan. Don't ask me why it is. What do I know? I don't have the answers to why God does what he does. His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. His ways higher than our ways. I wish I could sit in God's boardroom discussions and, you know, decide, you know, hey, can I offer my 2 cents in what to do? But I just never get invited into those meetings. I'm sorry. I really wish I could. But unfortunately, I'm limited by my humanity. Oh, I see all kinds of questions here. From where I understand, the chief of instruction of Beit HaMikdash, you're quoting Second Temple. I'm quoting the First Temple. I'm not going to discuss other political views and everything that's coming here in text, because it's distracting. All right? And it's a distraction for you as much as it is for us. Focus on Hashem. Don't focus on politics. Don't focus on all of the nonsense going on. He opens up in the second chapter of Enoch with a word. All right? I'm going to read to you these things. All right? And I just want you, please, take the moment. Now, if you're listening to this in the audio form, like you're driving, don't do what I'm about to tell you, but anybody else, just do this, please. Close your eyes, sit back, and let me read these words to you. Okay? Just listen. The text that I'm using is the Book of Enoch. It's available on Amazon.com. All right? Examine all the activities which take place in the sky and how they do not alter their ways. Examine the luminaries of heaven, how each one of them rises and sets. Each one is systematic or according to its own respective season. They do not divert from their appointed order. Look to the earth. Turn in your mind concerning the action which is taking place in her, from the beginning to the end, how all the work of God as being manifest does not change. And behold the summer and the winter, how the whole earth is filled with water and clouds and dew, and he causes rain to rest upon her. Chapter 3. Examine and observe everything, and the trees, how all their leaves appear as if they had withered and fallen, except 14 trees whose leaves do not fall, but the old foliage remains for about 2 or 3 years till new leaves come. Chapter 4. And again examine the days of the summer, how the heat of the sun is upon the earth and dominates her. And as for you, you will crave shade and shelter on account of the heat of the sun. And the earth shall burn with scorching heat, and you are not able to walk on the earth or on the rock on account of the heat. Chapter 5. Observe how the verdant trees are covered with leaves and they bear fruit. Pay attention concerning all things, and know in what manner he fashioned them. All of them belong to him who lives forever. His work proceeds and progresses from year to year. All his work prospers and obeys him, and it does not change. But everything functions in the way in which God has ordered it. And look at the seas. They do not depart, they fulfill all their duties. And just like the words of a prophet, he states, but as for you, you have been long-suffering, and you have not done the commandments, the mitzvot of Hashem, but you have transgressed. You speak slanderous, grave, and harsh words with impure mouths against his greatness. Oh, you hard-hearted, may you find no peace. Therefore you shall curse your days, and the years of your life shall perish, and multiply in eternal execration, and there will not be any mercy for you. It sounds just like Isaiah. just like Ezekiel. In those days you shall make your names an eternal execration unto the righteous, and the sinners shall curse you continually, you together with the sinners. But the elect, there shall be light, joy, and peace, and they shall inherit the earth. To you wicked ones, on the contrary, there will be a curse. And then wisdom shall be given to the elect, and they shall all live, and not return again to sin, either by being wicked or through pride. But those who have wisdom shall be humble, and not returning into sin. They shall not be judged all the days of their lives, not die through plague or wrath. They shall complete the designated number of the days of their lives, and peace shall increase their lives, and the years of their happiness shall be multiplied forever, and the gladness and peace all the days of their life. There you go. What is the key? He states here, examine. And I would love to know what the original word is, because, like I quoted you earlier, the Shulchan Aruch teaches us something. All right? I'm going to read it to you right now. The power of contemplation is the true secret in prayer. And I write about this, and I've taught about this. I have a lesson that I taught in Kehillat New Hempstead in the Muncie area in New York. It's available as a free lesson on koshertorah.com. It's called about power prayer. And I teach this there. Do you know what our obligations are with regards to prayer? Let me quote to you. I'm going to read to you from the Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Berurah. The laws of prayer, section 98 from the Orach Chaim. The laws of the Kavanah of the Amidah. All right? Listen to his words. This is actually a quote dating from, but from the tractate Brachot in the Gemara Daf Lamed. Hamit Palel Tzelich, the one who, I'll just translate, all right? You can get the Hebrew. The one who prays must Yichaven Lipo, concentrate his heart to the meaning of the words that come forth from his mouth, and think as if the Shekhinah is actually in his presence before him, removing all extraneous thoughts until the only thing that is left in his mind is the pure kavanah intent of his prayer. He should think as if he is standing before a king of flesh and blood, and that he is speaking to him and arranging his words. And he should mechaven again in these words that everything should be proper. All the more so that we stand before the Holy King, was the King of Kings, the Holy One, blessed be He. All right? Who observes and examines all thoughts. And this is what he says here. And this is the way of the original Hasidim, the men of renown, that they would meditate. The word is mental isolation. Hit bodedut. That's an important word, as you're going to see in a minute. And they would meditate in their prayers until they reach the level of complete hitpashtut, separation from all the physical, until the the hitgabrut kolach hasichli, until they were enabled by the power of pure thought mind. Until they got actually close to that level of prophecy. Shulchan Aruch, this is the right way to daven. And what can I say? How many of us daven like that? We're happy if we say the right words. But he spoke, quoting the Gemara of the men of renown, the ancient ones. Rabbi Chaim Vital, in his Shari Kiddushah, also writes about these ancient men of renown, how they would isolate themselves to fulfill the words that Enoch spoke here. They would go out into nature to contemplate the ways of nature. And this is what I always encourage people to do. We become so book smart that we become ignorant of wisdom. We think that because people express their opinions, and holy they are, in the books, that is the way reality is. Well, you want to know something that ain't true. Just the reality of it. You want to know the reality of the hand of God? Go out and watch nature. Go out and how God works with nature. I hate to tell you, it's not so nice and sweet. It's rather violent. But that's the way God is operating in nature at this time in our reality. The ancients would go out. They would separate themselves. They would go out. Rabbi Chaim Vital says they would go out into caves and into the deserts. Other people would go into isolation in their own homes. And these people, he calls here the Perushim, the separate ones. You might know them by another name from the anti-Semitic Christian tradition, where they were called Pharisees. But the way Rabbi Chaim Vital describes these, they sound more like what today we would call Essenes. And I've talked many times about the blurring of the lines of these two. I don't think it was a clear black and white distinction as many people state. And that's why I'm so embracing of these words here that we have in this book. Because ultimately, this path of isolation, mental isolation, bonding with nature, becomes the ways and means that the words that are written in the book come alive to us. There is a Jungian psychological term called unus mundus, which means one world. And it's a term that he uses to describe the psychological process of synchronicity, wherein which there seems to be some kind of peculiar ability of the inner workings of the unconscious mind and its communication to the conscious mind to guide and direct us through life, with natural phenomena that's happening outside in the world. That yes, when something happens in the world that we observe, that it actually does have a message for us. We call this in Torah, Hashgacha Pratit. We don't think like this anymore. We are so rational and academic that we have divorced ourselves. We've literally cut an entire section of our minds out of our own brains. We've become literally half-brained. And that's a terrible way, because by doing so, we lose that spiritual contact which enables us to connect directly with God, fulfilling the biblical mitzvah of devikut, bonding with God, which again, in books like the Paleo Etz, counts as one of the 613 commandments incumbent upon every Jew and Gentile in every place and every time. This is a big deal, because if you really want to talk about, like Enoch did, the coming destruction, the punishment of the wicked, their definition of wicked and ours is rather different. Because anyone who is half-brained is going to be defined as wicked. Because if you're not connected to God, you're defined as wicked. And if you refuse to cultivate the spiritual sensitivity that enables you to connect to God, then you are technically in violation of a law of the Torah, mitzvah de devikut. And if you're a violator of the law, what do you expect? Especially the mitzvah, which is so important. You can say, well, I observe Shabbat, I keep kashrut. Mazal tov. There's definite merit in that. But if God says to you, the time of destruction is nigh, you must move. But when he sends that spiritual message out and it gets to your neshama, but your neshama can't communicate to your physical mind because is a busy signal. Oh, well, I kind of understood that, but maybe it means this and maybe it means that. And let's go discuss this and blah, 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 blah. Well, too bad. By the time that lawnmower comes and chops off your head, you don't have any more time to discuss things. This is our problem. This is the big deal. This is why Chanoch opens with this warning. The Rasha'im, they're going to get it. Now, why did 6 million die in the Holocaust? Were they all deserving? Well, I hate to tell you. Rabbi Avadia Yosef, the Rishon LeZion, knew the secret traditions of the Kabbalah, and a while ago stated something so controversial that so many people angry at him, that those who died in the Holocaust were the reincarnation of previous sinners who indeed needed this rectification for the sake of their souls. And you want to know, that is exactly what the Kabbalah teaches. And you say, oh, that desecrates their holy memory. No, it doesn't. Shut up. What do you know about memory? What do you know about souls? What do you know about the way of God? All right? Are you sitting in that divine boardroom and God's talking to you? By all means, let us know. All right? We'll be the first ones to dial 911 and have the guys in the white coats come and take you to that nice place where all the other Mashiachs and Eliyahus are. Now, you know what I'm getting at, right? Some people are a little touched. understand something. God has his ways of doing things. There are souls. Believe it or not, there's an entire group of souls who, by definition, need to suffer. Because this is the way that they learn, that they grow, that they evolve. And unfortunately, as terrible as that might be, that's the truth of things. One of the fundamental principles of our holy Torah is that there is a judge and justice in the world. One of the 13 principles of Rambam. I don't see that on a day-to-day basis, and probably you don't too. I've been subject to injustice, whether it's by the state, whether it's by another person, or whatever. And I can hit my hand, Ribbono Shel Olam! Justice! Where's justice? What about that person who might have dented my car and cost me $100 in damage or whatever in the parking lot and didn't even leave a note or anything? Should I curse their soul to eternal doom? Oh, come on. What about if you get stopped by a cop who claims that you actually violated a law, which indeed you didn't? Well, you know, you usually lose. What about that? Somebody here is mentioning a question. So Hitler was Hashem's instrument? Well, let me ask you a question in return. Was Nebuchadnezzar, the one who destroyed the Holy Temple in Jerusalem and responsible for the first Holocaust, was he Hashem's instrument? You go read the prophets, and when you have the answer to the one, you will have the answer to the other. And if that's hard for you to swallow, well then, maybe you were like those in the first generation who couldn't handle what the prophets had to say. You got to be able to deal with that, with Hashem. Everything is in Hashem's hand. There is only a singularity in this entire universe. There is no validity to the old Zoroastrian myth, which was later adopted by Christendom, that there is a God and a devil. A good guy and a bad guy of equal stature, and they're duking it out for your soul, right? We see that portrayed in all of Western culture, right? God rules in heaven, the devil rules in hell, and you're in the middle, and if you're good, you get to heaven, and if you're bad, you go to hell forever. Remember the famous words, I believe it was, of Milton, that they said of Satan, "It is better to rule in hell than serve in heaven." That makes for really great dramatic novellic reading. But there's just no truth to it. God created Satan. God created evil. And they both serve God. Period. This was why he was saying here about the natural order. Everything goes in accordance to the natural order. The Satan exists because God ordained it so. Evil exists because God ordained it so. Read the book of Job. Are you really blind to that famous story that the Satan comes amongst the sons of God and God enters into a dialogue with them? And he says, "Hey, what do you think of Job?" Right? And you quote to me all the Midrashim, why he did it. Forget those for right now. The fact is that he was not only gambling with a man's soul. I mean, one of the punishments Job had to face was the immediate death of his children. Boom, they all died. Because of a game of gambling between God and the Satan. Boom. Now, some people actually want to say that even Job was not a historical, it's just more novellic. But whatever. The point is there to be made. What did the children of Job do? God has other ways of looking at things. That's what you have to understand. God's ways are higher than our ways. His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. And that is the truth. We will never in our physical little minds be able to understand the ways of heaven. And that is why Torah never commanded us, "You shall understand the words of our Torah." No. It says the words that Hashem commands us today are placed upon the heart. And the heart is a place of deep, intuitive, psychic, even unconscious knowing. This is the path of Hashem. This is the secret of bonding. In the Kabbalah, we speak of the brains, mochin, we call them, correlating to the upper sphere called Chochman Bina. And you have the intellect, but then you have to have the psychic, the intuitive, the spiritual. I hate that word spiritual, because it means anything. Everybody throws around this word spiritual. What does it mean? You don't know. It means connecting you with the parallel universal realities in the multiverse. Through those aspects of our minds, which are presently there, but cut off from our awareness now, through what we call consciousness. And they exist and reside as part of us in what we call the unconscious. So all prophetic teaching, all meditative instruction, whether it's Maase Merkava or anything of the kind, was all revolving around getting into the other parts of our mind so that we would not be half-brained. That's the great secret. This is, again, I repeat myself, everything that I teach here at Kosher Torah. When I read these words of Hanoch, and he's saying, go out and examine, it reflects the words that Rabbi Chaim quoted here. It reflects the words that Rabbi Yosef Karo included in the Code of Jewish Law, according to Gemara. Actually, it states of these Chassidim Rishonim, the original generations of pious ones who lived in the days of the Second Temple, very well, that lived at that time when the Perushim and the Essenes, that blurred line between them, because there was no demarcated halachic difference at that time. It states that they would meditate for an hour, daven their prayer for an hour, and then meditate for an hour after. And they did this, of course, 3 times a day, 9 hours out of the day. That's what they sought in their bondings. And they intended never to become part of the urban, sophisticated, extroverted, party-oriented lifestyle. They sought seclusion. They didn't want to be involved in all the distractions. So even here in this live forum, when I have people who are writing in text, they say, hey, what about this book? What about that idea? I say, stop. Stop going out there and start coming in. The solitude, the silence. This is the message here. This is the great warning. Hard and harsh times are coming upon us. And I don't know why this should be a surprise to anybody. We have amongst us now many people who are with us who live in Europe. Europe, 50, 60 years ago, was devastated in World War II. We have many people who are with us who live in Israel. People in Israel know that you've lived there at times when you've had bombings and places get destroyed. People die, but you rebuild. You think that the rest of the Western world is immune from that? Do you think the United States of America today, North or even South America, are so immune that terrorists cannot hit our shores? Have you totally forgotten 9/11? And you don't think that if there was unleashed all the worst-case scenarios of terrorist cells, God only knows what could happen. It is terrible. Terrible. But if God so ordains this, what can you be? I see there's someone here, unfortunately, is not listening to my advice. He's making a comment here, correlating Koresh, who was the Persian emperor who rebuilt the Second Temple, and correlating him to Hitler, who, of course, destroyed the Jewish people. He says, Cyrus was God's anointed, but by no means my understanding that Hitler was anointed. Let me remind you, let's get grounded here. Nowhere was Cyrus, Koresh, ever anointed by God. No prophet ever took the horn of oil and went to his head and put oil on him. He is called God's anointed because God used him as his pawn, just like he used Nebuchadnezzar as his pawn. Read the book of Jeremiah. Okay? And Adolf Hitler is God's pawn, and President Barack Obama is God's pawn, and Prime Minister Netanyahu is God's pawn, and President Ahmadinejad of Iran is God's pawn, and the Chinese people are God's pawns, as is Europe, as is Edom, as is Paras, as is our us. We are all in God's hands. There are no other hands. Ein od milivado. There is none other than him. I implore you, I'm trying to get you grounded here. Stop trying to be so philosophical and academic and try to understand things. We never will. The book of Enoch, and I'm stopping here because in chapter 6, it begins with the discussion about the fall of the angels and what they brought to humanity. I'm going to give you just a little taste before we go into this. Next few weeks, we'll get into this. We all know the story, Genesis chapter 6. It is the Kabbalistic tradition that the, in quote, sons of God who came down and took the daughters of men were fallen angels. Okay? And these fallen angels came down and taught humanity what today might be called technologies. And they were used specifically to manipulate and control and corrupt. That was their corrupted force. A lot of modern conspiracy theories speak about the extraterrestrials, oh, Roswell, Area 51, and all that other spooky stuff. And then you have people like Colonel Philip Corso, who was an intelligence officer at the Pentagon, who wrote a telltale book called The Day After Roswell, which he claims that, yeah, we got in touch with something, and we reversed engineered and got all this kinds of secret technology. And you read that on one hand, and you read these ancient stories of others coming down and giving us stuff, and you put them side by side, and you kind of like want to stroke your beard if you got one. Ladies, forgive it. And you go, I wonder, could it be? And especially one of the greatest cover-ups in the conspiracy world is where there's a real hotbed of UFO activity. Nope, not Roswell, New Mexico. Nope, not Ohio, not Nevada. Oh, let's see, where can it be? Where can it be? Of course, I'm being dramatic here. Eretz Yisrael. The land of Israel has one of the largest reported and unreported number of occurrences, not of close encounters just of the third kind, but of the fourth kind as well. Go look that up online, what all that means. There's something out there, and people know there's something out there. And believe you me, all by God's hand. No, I am not talking about little bulgy-eyed aliens with green skin and flying saucers from Mars. Come on, can we get a little bit more sophisticated, please? Go back through our stories, through the words of our sages. You must reconnect. There was danger with these fallen angels in the times before the flood. And there is an equal danger of similar presences today. This is the great worry. I saw somebody asked a question in text with regards to, should the Israeli Defense Forces be disbanded for trusting in God? The answer to that is, of course, that's ridiculous. It's a silly, silly thing. But ultimately, even the IDF will be defeated. It is the destiny that our ultimate salvation will come from supernatural means. There's a very peculiar prophecy that speaks in the book of Zechariah that says in the end of days, the defenders of Jerusalem, which is not just Jerusalem proper, but the entire area, if you will, even the entire Jewish people, that the smallest among them will fight like King David, meaning there will be mighty warriors killing tens of thousands. Each one will be like a combination Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan, Jet Li, martial arts master. And the greatest of them will fight like the angel of Hashem before them. The angel of Hashem is a malach, and he fights by what we would today call the powers of Kabbalah. There are always the guardian mikubalim who guard the children of Israel, just like it was in the days of World War II. How come then they couldn't reach out to Europe? Because it wasn't their domain, and their hands were tied by the sins of the people. But when the Nazis came to northern Morocco, northern Africa, the rabbis there, they did their job. And indeed, on the day that the Nazis were ready to round up the Jews, something happened. What a coincidence that on that exact day something happened. And the Jews of North Africa were saved. Well, what do you know? What do you know? That at the same exact place, where Rabbi Yehuda Fatiya Alav Shalom created a psychic barrier. Coincidence that that place called El Alamein was the place where Rommel's armies were defeated. What do you know? We fight the spiritual battle because we are bonded to Hashem with Kiddushah, with Tahara, with Mitzvot. And for you who are Bnei Noach out there, this is just as much a message for you. No, don't go around converting, becoming Jews. Don't be wannabe Jews. Don't try to be make-believe Jews. But be the righteous people of character and integrity and morality and dignity and honor. These are the righteous that Hanukkah speaks about. And his promises, as is everyone else's, from all the prophets, we will be protected. God be willing, we should be included in that. We, how? Because we hear, like Eliyahu did the call de Mamadaka. Remember the famous story of Eliyahu Navi? I have classes on this online. I have in a written form and audio form. You've never learned, listen to my classes on Eliyahu Navi. Shame, shame, shame. You go get those PDF lessons and listen to them. You remember the famous story. Eliyahu Navi goes up to Har Carmel, calls down fire from heaven, wipes out the evil prophets of Baal. Right? Wow, that's a powerful guy, right? Fire from heaven, yeah! And the next day, Queen Jezebel says, so help me, I'm gonna kill you. What does Eliyahu do? Oh yeah! Calls out his fiery power and zaps her, as if he was like Darth Vader and, you know, using the force and all that. Not my Bible. What does Eliyahu do when he hears the threat of Jezebel? He picks up his tail and he hightails it out of the country. He flees. Why? Because he was smart. And he knew that that was the right thing to do. Remember, like I always say, you do what you can and God will do what you can't. God never told him to have a showdown with Jezebel. It wasn't the plan of heaven. God had other plans for Jezebel. So Eliyahu, sensitive, intuitive, psychic, clairvoyant, knew, I think it's time to take a vacation. And he split. And that's when he went all the way to Mount Sinai, read the biblical story. And he calls out to Hashem, my rewards. And Hashem says, you'll get your rewards, don't worry. But that's what practicality dictates to us. This is what we must understand. This is what we must understand. Was Eliyahu afraid? I don't think so. But he was in tune enough with Hashem to know what was right to do. And then when he reached Sinai, he heard what's called the Kol Demamadaka, that soft, silent voice within. Do you hear that voice? Can you commune with Hashem? The minute that you say, God and I talk all the time. The Lord told me. Yeah, it's probably your own little inner voice rather than God's inner voice, which is telling you. Okay? Hearing the little voice of God. And I hear a number of these religious fundamentalist types. Yeah, I went in the prayer and God told me. And God told me this and God told me that. Yeah, okay, I'm sure it was God. A good psychotherapist knows that it's usually what we call a projection of your own inner numinosis. All right, your own inner processes and beliefs projected in the image of what you think is God. The real true voice, called Dimama Daka, is this soft silence like an inner echo. And it's a challenge. It's intuitive. It's deep and it's hard. It's not what you think you want to hear. And that's it. So ultimately, like the Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu, he gave us the commandments, 613 in number. But then along came the prophet Habakkuk and summed them up into one mitzvah. Makot, tractate Makot in the Gemara says this, 24a. Tzadik be'emunato yichyeh, Habakkuk said. The righteous live by their faith. Faith is not some stupid, misguided, blind faith, right? I trust in God, so I'm going to blindfold myself and walk across the highway. And I'm sure God will part the trucks for me. You know what we call a person who does something like that? That's right, an idiot. That's not faith. That's stupidity. You do what you can, and God will do what you can't. So, learn the lessons of bonding with Hashem. Learn the secret of survival. A time is coming upon us when we're going to have to hightail it, just like they did in Europe, just like they did in other places around the world. And you're going to just have to learn to survive. And if you can't hear that kol dimama daka, that soft, silent voice speaking from the back of your head saying, go here, do this, be there then, be this way. It's an intuitive thing. It's a psychic thing. It'll be almost counter-rational sometimes. You're just going to say, but I know, I really believe enough shit, think this is what I got to do. If you're with God, He will conceal you and protect you. So whatever continent you are, whatever domain you are, you will be with Hashem, and Hashem will be with you. And then you will fulfill the blessing side of these words of Hanoch, and not be accounted amongst the wicked who can and do not do this. Bezat Hashem, we'll continue these classes as we move along. I'm Rabbi Ariel Bar Tzedok from KosherTorah.com. Thank you all for listening. Laila Tov. Shalom.